In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Reverend Al. Why do you keep showing up in my feed, Reverend Al? That's what I want to know. Hey, how are you? Welcome to this midweek edition of The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. I'm your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. Hoping that this Wednesday finds you and yours well. And that you didn't waste your time watching a Democrat debate last night. Then again, it may have been worth it just for a couple of moments. Is it really worth it to sit up that late? Something that starts that late and watch just for a couple of moments? I don't know. I mean, in the moments being snubbed handshakes between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and what else was there? There was Amy Klobuchar's eyebrow. What's up with the eyebrow? I mean, it's like she had Botox on one side of her face. Oops, gotta run. Gotta debate. I'll come back later and get the other side done. I'm sorry. That's really what it kind of looks like to me. It's just, it was just so weird. And she had her hair different. It was pushed back. It was different last night because a lot, and I mean a lot of people have said, wow, look at her hair. Look how it shakes. She trembles like a chihuahua. I mean, and her hair makes it obvious. It just vibrates the way it has been standing out in front of her face. And so she had her hairstyle differently last night. So she's got the hairstyle differently. And I know this is what happened. So she's got her hairstyle differently. And her eyebrow said, wait a minute, I got to do something to make her look crazy. So her eyebrow jacks up. Her right eyebrow was just so much higher than her left eyebrow. It was really strange. I mean, I'm not saying her eyebrows look odd anyway, but at least they do to me. They just look odd, especially when it's that high, way up above her eye. I mean, bless her heart, she's starting to look like that little lady that you see in the grocery store from time to time who paints her eyebrows. Her eyebrows have been gone for years. She's plucked them all out, and she paints them on above where her eyebrows naturally used to grow. And you know she's had to have looked in a mirror when she did it, and you know she had to have looked at a mirror on the way out the door, and she's like, I'm so cool. She's got her stuff together. And, oh, bless her heart. There were other things as well. Bless his heart, Bernie. Bernie and Elizabeth. And the moderators who kind of wrap things up by hitting the whole tiff between Bernie and Elizabeth Sanders. Elizabeth Warren, I should say. Listen, when Van Jones, who's on the CNN staff, says nothing he saw on the stage could defeat Trump, you have to sort of raise an eyebrow yourself. only you do it intentionally. And you take notice. Now, am I being, I don't know, am I reading too much into this when he says he saw nothing on stage that could defeat Trump? It makes little flashy red lights start going off. And that, for me at least, because we know CNN is tightly controlled today. Jeff Zucker is focused. He's the head honcho at CNN. He is focused on destroying Donald Trump. He's told them it's going to be wall-to-wall impeachment, nothing but impeachment. We're going to destroy Trump. This is what he's told his people. He's got reporters. Honestly, there are people at CNN who would really like to do some journalism, but their hands are tied. They can't do anything unless it's approved by Zucker, and they're having these meetings. You know, they have these phone calls, big boardroom with a speakerphone thing in the middle of the table, and all these people working for CNN sitting around the table, and Zucker's telling them, impeach, 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 impeach. He sounds like Maxine Waters on steroids. I mean, he's all intent and focused on destroying Donald Trump. Given that, why would they allow anyone on camera to say negative things about the field of Democrat candidates. It just strikes me as being kind of odd. Was Van Jones ripping at his earpiece at the time because people were saying, no, you can't say that? No. But were there people in the control room gasping, hands, the face in their hands going, oh, no, I can't. The phone call tomorrow is going to be brutal. Was that going on? It just makes me wonder. It's one of those things that makes me go, you know? So I just have to wonder. And when Van Jones gets something right, I have to acknowledge it. There is nothing that was on that stage last night that could stand against the man who took the stage elsewhere in America last night with thousands of cheering people inside and outside the venue. Donald Trump had another Keep America or Make America Great Again rally, and he had lots and lots of people. He had some funny things to say about government regulation and the way they've messed up light bulbs and bathroom fixtures and such. You know how you turn. Nowadays, if you go to the store, and this has happened to us around our house in the last couple of years, where we just got to replace that. We keep replacing bits and pieces on it, and it's finally dead. You know how it is. You keep replacing O-rings and washers and stuff, and you buy these. It's at one point, you buy these faucets, which they proudly proclaim to be will never leak for the whole life of them, and then in the middle of the night, you hear them drip, 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 drip. You hear them off in the distance, and I got to do something about that. And so it finally gets to the point where they're old enough you can't buy the repair kits for them anymore, so it's doggone it. So you go to Home Depot or Lowe's or wherever, and you buy a new faucet. And you pay through the nose for it if you buy a name brand, Delta. And if you do that and you go to replace it, what do you get? You turn the faucet on full blast, and there's this anemic little, what is this? Where's all my water? They're regulated so steeply, so stiffly now. And you know this to be true of everything. Shower heads, all kinds of stuff. It's all that way now. And that harkens back to I don't know if you remember the Seinfeld episode where the building that they all lived in that Seinfeld and Kramer lived in, the super was replacing everybody's shower heads with low flow shower heads, and their hair all looked horrible because they couldn't get clean. This is what it's like. The government is now the super, and the government is telling us we can't have a decent shower anymore. So he made a funny joke about having a beautiful head of hair, and he's got to have a lot of water. He had an adoring crowd. He had a great night. The Democrat candidates, not so much. And then Van Jones, the pinko commie 9/11 truther that he is, says there was nothing on the stage that could defeat Donald Trump. And he's on the network that is focused on defeating Donald Trump. What does this mean? Does it mean that that the DNC has something up their sleeve? It's already incredibly obvious that the DNC is in the tank for Joe Biden, and that everything that's happening that threatens Joe Biden is getting pushed aside. I mean, Bernie doesn't have a chance. Bernie may have a lot of people that love him, but Bernie doesn't have a chance. Elizabeth Warren doesn't have a chance. It's just crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Ah, gosh, I derailed my own train of thought. That's impressive. You have to admit that. Oh, man, 9 minutes into the podcast and I'm losing my mind. Good gravy. Good gravy. I actually had a path to follow here, and I've just blown myself right off of it. Hey, I got another observation for you. This is about liberals losing their mind as well. And that is Vince Vaughn having a quick chat with President Trump. How long did it last? 30 seconds or so? He's in the box, in the VIP box, has a little chat with President Trump. Vince Vaughn's a libertarian. We kind of know from his record, and he's vocal about some things. He's not a conservative. He's not he's not a Republican. He's not a Democrat. But his politics are fairly well recognized. So he has this chat with President Trump. They shake hands. He parts ways. He moves on. And liberals are losing their minds. They've decided they're just going to end this guy. That's it for your career. I don't know if you've seen the comments on social media, but it's wow. You go look at articles. Go look at an anti-Trump news website like CNN or someplace like that and look for this story and then read the comments below it. You would think that Vince Vaughn killed Hillary Clinton. It's that bad. It's that crazy. Vince Vaughn has a brief chat with President Trump. These same people who are going nuts about this brief chat with President Trump had absolutely no problem at all with President Barack Obama going to a baseball game with the communist leader of Cuba. Did you forget that happened? Obama went to a ball game with the communist leader of Cuba. And nobody had anything negative to say about it. Nobody on the left did. Oh, that's great. What? The leader of a nation that actually kills people who dissent with the government? The leader of a nation 90 miles off of our southernmost point in America, in Key West, 90 miles away, a leader of this nation, this island nation, whose government has killed who knows how many people, really? I almost said hundreds, and I said, no, it's thousands. And how many? How many people have been murdered by this nation because they dissent? How many people have built rafts and boats and things out of scraps and floated across the waters to Florida to get away from Cuba? People aren't doing that to get into Cuba. Even the rich celebrities who say that they're leaving the country if so-and-so or wins or this doesn't happen or that doesn't happen, they're not trying to get into Cuba. But people are trying to get out because life there is brutal. And Obama goes to a baseball game with the communist leader of Cuba and the same people who are losing their cookies over Vince Vaughn having a quick chat with President Trump had nothing to say. Trump derangement syndrome. It's real. It's very real. And speaking of Trump derangement syndrome, do you remember, I know you do, you remember Michael Avenatti?
Have you slipped and fallen or accidentally been gang raped or even sexually assaulted? Even if you didn't really, you may be entitled to free publicity. At Avenatti & Avenatti, we troll for troubled women and exploit them for every ounce of earned media that we can manage. Remember that porn star you didn't really sleep with? Well, what are you waiting for? At Avenatti & Avenatti, we don't get publicity until you get publicity. Haven't suffered any high crimes or sex demeanors? No problem. Our team of publicity professionals will help trigger your memory until we find something suitably salacious for the major media to eat right up. We get you the publicity we deserve. Because at Avenatti & Avenatti, we put the Avenatti back into Avenatti. Call 1-900-PORN-LAW to speak to an attorney now. 1-900-PORN-LAW. Calls are just $3,000 a minute.
Well, the California attorney formerly representing porn star Stormy Daniels and unrelenting Trump critic Michael Avenatti has been arrested again, this time by federal agents after he left a disciplinary hearing where California's state bar was pursuing his disbarment. The Daily Beast reported yesterday that Avenatti's arrest occurred outside a disciplinary hearing in which the State Bar of California has accused this hard-charging, tough-talking attorney of using a doctored document to scam a client out of nearly $840,000, funneling money from a lawsuit settlement fund into his own personal use. Reuters reporter Brad Heath posted a snippet on Twitter of a court document regarding Avenatti's arrest with the message, Federal prosecutors in Los Angeles say he violated the terms of his pretrial release. The feds didn't specify what potential violations of the conditions of pretrial release Avenatti allegedly committed. The Daily Beast reported that as Avenatti was being led out of the courthouse, he told reporters, "I'm completely innocent." And to add to his woes, a judge in another case against him, he denied his request to delay a trial against him in another state. According to the AP, a judge in New York decided to move forward as scheduled with the January 22nd trial. That's a week from today. Deciding whether Avenatti is guilty of trying to extort tens of millions of dollars from Nike. Bless his heart, Michael Avenatti's in trouble again. You know, it really couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Well, of course you can. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Wednesday edition. Recording early in the morning, Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. Welcome aboard. As I try to say every day, thank you so much for being here. Whether you're here on the podcast or you're here live on Facebook Live, I thank you for being there and for sharing with your friends. It means a lot to me. Thanks. Thanks so much. I enjoy these little morning get-togethers. You know, I'm like everybody else, I guess. And from time to time, I'm looking at, I got to put stuff together for tomorrow. Maybe I should just retire from that and stop doing it. And then I realized, you know what? No. This is kind of fun for me. I enjoy doing it. And I did broadcasting for a long time, off and on. And it was probably the most fulfilling. One of the most fulfilling things I've done. And I just want to stay in the swing of it. So I get up every day, and at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock central, I fire things up in the studio and we go live on Facebook and record and put the podcast out shortly afterwards. And I spend time during the day scanning news stories for the next day. And it's just, it's enjoyable for me, and I'm glad it's part of your day. Thanks for being there. Well, you're familiar with Project Veritas, right? These guys who do undercover videos and expose people, organizations for what they really and truly are. Well, if you follow them, as many do on YouTube, you've learned that you won't see every time they release something because YouTube is now censoring Project Veritas. They're putting Project Veritas low on search lists. They're doing all kinds of things to hamper their reach. So if you want to get the latest from Project Veritas when they release something, you have to subscribe. I would suggest you do that. There will be a link in today's show notes to this particular story and the Veritas Project Veritas action video, and you can go from there and you can find what's going on. Right now they have a website called Expose 2020. Expose2020.com is the web address for their current project. And their current project has kicked off. This is just the first video that's come out. And James O'Keefe, the head honcho at Project Veritas, has said, "Oh, this is just the first video. Just wait. And this one is crazy." An undercover video published by Project Veritas yesterday shows a field organizer for Senator Bernie Sanders' 2020 campaign saying Soviet gulags were actually a positive phenomenon, suggesting some similar program could re-educate Trump supporters and billionaires. The video begins with a Project Veritas journalist asking an individual identified as Sanders organizer Kyle Jurek if MAGA people could be re-educated if Sanders wins the White House. Jurek replies, "We got to try. In Nazi Germany, after all, after the fall of the Nazi Party, there was a bleep ton of the populace that was bleeping Nazified." He didn't say bleeping. I'm editing. Germany had to spend billions of dollars re-educating their bleeping people to not be Nazis. We're probably going to have to do the same bleeping thing here. That's kind of what all Bernie's whole bleeping like, hey, free education for everybody, because we're going to have to teach you not to be a bleeping Nazi. Whew. In another part of the video, Jurek is seen discussing Soviet Union dictator Joseph Stalin's use of gulags, where he claims that the CIA was overly critical of them. He said people were actually paid a living wage in the gulags. They had conjugal visits in the gulags. Gulags were meant for re-education. Jurek is then seen suggesting that the most effective way to re-educate the billionaire class is to order them to break rocks for 12 hours a day. He said, the greatest way to break a bleeping billionaire for their privilege and their idea that they're superior, go break rocks for 12 hours a day. You're now a working class person, and you're going to bleeping learn what that means, right? The video also shows Jurek warning that Milwaukee, host of this year's Democratic National Convention, will burn if Sanders fails to win the party's nomination. He says, if Bernie doesn't get the nomination or it goes to a second round at the DNC convention, bleeping Milwaukee will burn. It'll start in Milwaukee, and then when the police push back on that, other sites will bleeping explode. The footage concludes with Jurek issuing the chilling prediction that Milwaukee could see riots akin to the 1968 convention in Chicago, where left-wing activists engaged in violent riots in the streets. He says, be ready to be in Milwaukee for the DNC convention. We're going to make 1968 look like a effing Girl Scouts effing cookout. The cops are going to be the ones effing beaten in Milwaukee. The undercover video's emergence comes as 2020 Democrats are slated to debate. That was, of course, last night, the final meeting before the Iowa caucuses in February 3rd. Project Veritas founder James O'Keefe has teased that Tuesday's footage is one of several upcoming videos to be released as part of the group's Expose 2020 campaign. Remember, that's expose2020.com. You need to go there and you can sign up. They'll send you notices in your email whenever they release a new video. That way you will see every video instead of having to dig for it for a long time on YouTube to be able to find it. This guy, now, here's what people are saying. And you may have already seen this. Ah, this is just one fringe guy. This is just one guy. A field organizer. One field organizer for Sanders. He's one freak. He doesn't represent everybody. Okay. Here's the thing. He still represents Bernie Sanders. There should have been a process to make sure that someone this demented was not in his process. I suspect he is representative of a pretty good chunk of Bernie's core support group. Because Bernie himself, though he talks about being a, quote, democratic socialist, end quote, and that he doesn't, what he's talking about isn't anything like Venezuela or any of the other failed communist states. We know his history. We know where he spent his honeymoon. It was Russia. He was drinking with commie pals in Russia on his honeymoon, singing communist songs along with his communist pals in Russia on his honeymoon. We know he's never really held a real job. We know until he started to be successful in politics, he didn't know what it was to make money. He still doesn't know what it means to honestly earn money. Which is why his propositions, what he proposes to do, they're completely nuts. They're unrealistic. They can't possibly work. For example, even CNN recognizes that Bernie Sanders' proposed spending programs would at least double federal spending over the next decade. The program's being pushed in the presidential campaign by the Vermont Independent Representative. They represent an increase in government cost and size unprecedented since World War II. CNN attributes this information to estimates from Sanders' website and experts' projections. It said the plans would increase spending as a share of the economy far greater than President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal or the Great Society under President Lyndon Johnson. Projections for Sanders' single-payer health care plan? About $30 trillion or more over the next decade. His Green New Deal, plus the cancellation of all student debts and a guaranteed federal jobs program, could be more than his single-payer health care plan, according to CNN. Larry Summers, the former chief White House economic advisor to Barack Obama, says, on the spending side, this is far more radical than all previous presidencies, on either the right or the left. The Sanders spending increase is roughly 2.5 times the size of the New Deal and the estimated fiscal impact of George McGovern's campaign proposals. And Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, says, we're literally talking about increases in government spending that would double the size of government as a share of gross domestic product. Despite the predictions, Sanders has faced almost no questions from other candidates or the media about how he would finance the massive increase. Even CNN is acknowledging that Sanders' proposals are going to be so expensive that we can't imagine paying for them. Even CNN. But we're not hearing anybody challenge him on this publicly, are we? Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. How you doing? You having a good week so far? We're at the middle of it. Yes, we are. You stand on your tiptoes, look off in the distance, you can see the weekend. Just a couple of more days after today. And you can unplug, relax, recharge, enjoy your family and friends. And just remember what life is really all about. Oh, man, I was skimming through social media during the break. I do that during the breaks. I'm skimming, looking for new stuff. What's new? What's happening? And I follow Franklin Graham on Facebook, and I just shared this on the Daily Perspective page. And on I actually have a public page now. I have my own personal timeline that only my friends, people I really know, can get to. And I also have a page. And I've started putting things on that page bit by bit. And this is one of the things. And I just want to read you what Franklin Graham posted. And it caught my eye because it's about the 1968 Mustang used in the movie Bullet, Steve McQueen's 1968 Fastback. That car was sold at Meekum's Auto Auction in Kissimmee, Florida, for an incredible $3.4 million. If you think that's a lot for a car, you should watch auto auctions. Actually, there's a TV show that's on the Motor Trend Network, if you get that on your cable system, called Chasing Classic Cars. Wayne Carini he's the featured guy in the show. He has a business where he brokers automobiles and he advises people on buying and selling classic cars. And I watch it. I watch it pretty regularly. And I've seen cars go for twice this. But anyway, let's go back. This is what Franklin Graham posted. This week, Steve McQueen's 1968 Fastback GT Bullet car sold at Meekum's Auto Auction in Kissimmee, Florida for an incredible $3.4 million. I was there. A few cars before the Bullet car came through, we auctioned a 1937 Studebaker pickup that had been donated to the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, and the proceeds are being used for our Rapid Response Team Chaplain Ministry. The Bullet car is a piece of American history, but what many people don't know is that after many troubled years, Steve McQueen gave his heart to Jesus Christ. His heart and his life were transformed. My father, Billy Graham, met and talked with Steve McQueen during the time he was sick and gave him his Bible and wrote in the front for Steve. When Steve McQueen passed away, he was holding that Bible. God and his word had become precious to him. I'm going across Florida this week to share the same hope that transformed Steve McQueen's life and saved his soul, that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came to earth to save sinners. What's even more valuable than the bullet car? Your soul. The Bible says, "For what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul?" And that's what Franklin Graham posted just actually less than an hour ago to social media. Good stuff. And I have a friend who works for Franklin Graham, Scott Lenning. He's been, last year, he spent a lot of time in Australia prepping the way for a Franklin Graham crusade that went across Australia. And he's working in England now. He's off and on in England. He's home sometimes, and then he's in England sometimes working with groups and churches and such to prep for Franklin Graham's tour of England that's coming up. And it's an interesting job. Used to work with us at Scott Dawson's, the Evangelistic Association. All right, let's move forward. I was talking about, the news. So let's get back to the news. Nancy Pelosi has set today for the vote on impeachment managers. Last Friday, Speaker Nancy Pelosi finally caved in after weeks of an impeachment standoff with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. The timing suggests articles of impeachment passed on December 18th might formally arrive in the Senate by Monday or Tuesday of this week, sparking a trial that would tie up at least three Democratic candidates for president and perhaps prevent the debate schedule for Tuesday, January 14th. Yet Pelosi delayed again. We'll get back to this. In a closed-door meeting on Tuesday morning, Pelosi announced a schedule to vote on impeachment managers today, giving Senators Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren a brief reprieve before a Senate trial that will keep them from campaigning on the ground in the final weeks before the Iowa caucuses. The Washington Examiner's Susan Ferreccio reports, the House will likely vote on Wednesday to appoint Democratic lawmakers to serve as impeachment managers in a Senate trial weighing the charges against President Trump. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, a California Democrat, announced the schedule in a closed-door meeting Tuesday in the Capitol basement. Senate Republican leaders predicted a trial beginning next week. House Rules Committee Chairman Jim McGovern, a Democrat from Massachusetts, told the Examiner that Democrats will name the impeachment managers who will then walk the articles over to the Senate. I hope they don't get lost. Pelosi's stall tactic, if you know the route, you know that's funny. Pelosi's stall tactic has caused no little head scratching among the chattering classes. She and her fellow Democrats characterized Trump as an imminent threat to the 2020 election, rushing impeachment as fast as possible. Indeed, when the White House raised a routine executive privilege defense to some congressional subpoenas, House Democrats decided not to wait and challenge the matter in court, but rather to add another article of impeachment for obstruction of Congress. Yet, after this rush, Pelosi inexplicably held back the articles from the Senate. McConnell had condemned the impeachment, claiming that it was driven by partisan rage. He argued, House Democrats want to create new rules for this president because they feel uniquely enraged. This is by far the thinnest basis for any House-passed presidential impeachment in American history. He condemned it as the most rushed, least thorough, and most unfair impeachment inquiry in modern history. McConnell urged the Senate to reject the articles of impeachment in order to serve the stabilizing, institution-preserving, fever-breaking role for which the United States Senate was created. Indeed, the founders conceived of the Senate as a check on the passions of the people as expressed by the House of Representatives. The Republican leader argued that the Senate was created for just such a time as this. When McConnell announced that he would be coordinating with the White House Counsel on impeachment, aghast media and Democrats wrung their hands, complaining about unfairness, despite the fact that Senate Democrats coordinated with the Bill Clinton White House during Clinton's impeachment. McConnell repeatedly called the House Speaker's bluff, and Pelosi finally caved last Friday after Republicans introduced a measure enabling the Senate to nullify an impeachment passed by the House if the Speaker did not forward the articles to the upper chamber. Indeed, this measure makes a great deal of sense, since Pelosi had effectively pocket-vetoed her own impeachment. It seems all this wrangling may have been a political ploy. Pelosi may have delayed the impeachment in order to grant 2020 Democrats one last chance to debate. This is what I was talking about getting back to. And some more time to campaign before the Iowa caucuses. And to grant America a Christmas reprieve from impeachment. Yet in doing so, she undermined her own party's claims about the need to impeach and remove Trump immediately. Meanwhile, Pelosi wasted no time in launching a virtue-signaling war powers resolution against Trump's decisive action to take out Iran's terror general Qasem Soleimani. If she can prioritize this toothless resolution, why couldn't she send the articles over to the Senate more promptly after the impeachment vote? This official vote on managers seems yet another stall tactic. The articles of impeachment have already been passed, and there's reason to believe that they are already under the purview of the Senate, because they've been passed. Pelosi's political game has backfired. Her delay may have bought Klobuchar, Warren, and Sanders a debate, but impeachment will still tie them up in the weeks before the Iowa caucuses. Fair warning. Iowans can expect many visits from campaign surrogates like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Uh-oh. And you can thank Nancy Pelosi for that. Yep. AOC is coming to see you to represent her candidate. Oh, my gosh. Which is, of course, Bernie Sanders. So the whole impeachment, it's a charade. The whole impeachment clown show, this kangaroo court, has no substance, has no support in reality. It is merely a distraction and an effort to undermine the President of the United States. Nancy Pelosi herself has actually used the words that he will be impeached for life. My wife, Jane, says, can she actually do that? She asked me this last night. Can she impeach him for life? And I explained to her, no, baby, that's what that means is that from now on, he's going to have that label on him. He was, as a president, he was impeached. And I've said this from the very beginning. That's the whole reason for doing this. That's the whole reason for everything. Everything that the Democrats have done. Everything. Everything they have done has been to label this president, to damage this president, to besmirch him, to throw as much mud upon him as possible, to do everything they can to damage him in any way they can. It's all about politics. It is merely a political campaign tactic. They know they can't defeat him during the election, so they will do as much damage to him as they possibly can. And one of those things is the scarlet letter I. They're going to tattoo him with the scarlet letter and make him less appealing, if at all possible. It's backfiring. It's spectacularly backfiring. Because the more people see the Democrats on television, the more they hear what they have to say, the more exposure, the more daylight there is on who they are and what they're doing, the more people are against what they're doing. The stats tell us the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot by doing this, just in the way the Republicans did during Clinton. So, Nancy, keep it up, baby. We appreciate it.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And that, as I've said many times, is what this is all about. Because the Democrats wholeheartedly believe that in 2016 they would have another 8 years of what they got under Obama, which was basically laying the foundation, laying the groundwork, or I should say further laying the groundwork for communism in America. I know that sounds like, what, did he just accuse people of communism? Well, that's just crazy talk. Well, if you actually look at what's been going on, and you look at, go back to the Bernie Sanders story, the guy, the field representative for Bernie Sanders. Look at what this guy believes. And look at what so many people you see commenting on social media today, below news stories, on news sites. Look at what they believe. Look at what AOC believes. Look at what Bernie Sanders believes. Look at what these, Elizabeth Warren, look at what these people believe. Look at what they embrace. I'm not far off base if I'm off base at all. Because that's what they're after. They hoped, against all hope, that they would have another 8 years. If they had succeeded in winning, if Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, we would have never seen another Republican president. Unless that Republican president was a progressive and was in bed with the Democrat Party. And then eliminated all lines between philosophies. We never would have had fair representation from the states ever again. I don't think we have it now. And here's an example. Excuse me while I break off from this tangent to another tangent. I posted on social media this morning an ad from Doug Jones for Senate. And this was, something that he posted, and I'm trying to pull it back up here because, like I said, it's a tangent. I didn't have this prepared. But it hit me. Wow. A friend of mine had commented. This is why I saw this. A friend of mine had actually commented on this particular post in Facebook. It was a post from Doug Jones for Senate. And it said, in 2 years, Doug has accomplished a lot, and we can't wait to see what he does with six more. and that's coming from ALReporter.com. It's an ad for them. And then right below that is a comment from someone. And the comment says, I hope you get reelected. Full support from a Californian. Wait a minute. A Californian? This guy lives in California. He can't vote here. But he can sure send a lot of money. As I posted, this illustrates one way our system is rigged. Alabama Senator Doug Jones has ardent supporters outside of Alabama. Why? Because he's allowed to campaign and fundraise in other states. And since Jones is a progressive Democrat, he's fundraising and campaigning in progressive states such as California. In fact, most of his campaign donations are coming from outside of the state of Alabama. How is this proper? How is this representation of Alabamians? It isn't. It's representative of progressive Californians. He's not representing the people of Alabama. He can't get the funding he needs to win from the state because he doesn't have the support in the state. He doesn't have the support in the state. He can't raise money in the state. But because of the 17th Amendment, he can go outside the state and campaign anywhere he wants and raise money in liberal progressive strongholds for his campaign back in his home state. Is that representation of the people of his state? Absolutely not. It's representation of progressives. It's representation of leftists. And this is how they want to run America. They had hoped in 2016 to have 8 more years. Had they had 8 more years, they would have passed more legislations, enabling more people like Doug Jones from Alabama to campaign where they can really get campaign funds, because they can't get them back home in their home states because the people of their home states don't like them. They can't get enough money from the businesses, from the big donors back home in order to effectively buy campaign ads in order to convince enough people, to sway enough people to vote for them. Those campaign ads containing misdirection, lies, and the like. You've seen it happen yourself many, many times. You know what I'm talking about. Making grand claims about wonderful things that they've done. And how one of the things Doug Jones, and I live in the state of Alabama, so I know about this, what's going on. His campaign ads will make claims about how he is not Chuck Schumer's guy. He's Alabama's guy. But the thing is, he votes. He does whatever Chuck Schumer tells him to do. We would have had even worse situations than this. Can you imagine what Congress would vote for itself were it allowed to do so? Look what it's done so far. This is just one example. Doug Jones being able to campaign out of his state, and in your state, wherever you may live, there are people, leftists, progressives, who are campaigning, raising funds on the East Coast and the West Coast, and not where you live. If you live in the heartland of America, and you have Democrats running for office, the odds are their campaign funding is coming from outside of your state. And that's wrong. There's no other way to say it, but it's wrong. W-R-O-N-G, wrong. They should not be allowed to do that. They're allowed to run on a national level. I fussed about this when Jeff Sessions went on Fox News and announced his candidacy with Tucker Carlson. Jeff Sessions, the Republican, took the national stage to announce his candidacy to represent his state. I had people on social media when I fussed about this on the on my personal page and other places. I fussed about this. I had people on social media tell me, "Ah, that's stupid. He announced in Alabama." I looked. No, he didn't. He announced on national news. I disagree with that just as much as I disagree with what Doug Jones is doing. But it happens because Congress convinced the states, hey, let us do this. Because before that amendment, the 17th, was passed, then these people were appointed by your state legislature. The people you vote for in your state capital, where you can get in a car and drive to your state capital instead of having to pay for a plane ticket to go to D.C., you can get in your car, go to your state capital, and camp out in the outer office of your state legislators. You can camp out there and let them know what you think. It's much, much, much more difficult to do that in Washington, D.C. The expense, the time. And they know this. One reason they're happy with it. Bless our hearts. This is the state of things in America today. We got busy just being Americans. At some point in our history, we got comfortable. And we put our head down and went to work and started building a life for our families. Building businesses, creating nest eggs to bless our families, our children with in future years. buying property, selling property, pushing forward with the American dream. We put our head down and got busy. And while our head was down and we were getting busy, living life and preparing things for the lives of our kids for the future, we took our eyes off of Washington, D.C. We would occasionally lift our heads and go, this guy's running, that guy's running. I know this guy. He's in office now. Oh, let's just put him back in. But we weren't really paying attention to what they were really up to. We didn't bother to read in depth about what they were proposing. And as a result, after a while, at one of those points where we looked up to make decisions about a vote, we realized, wow, things are kind of messed up. And then when we start looking closer, we realize things are not just kind of messed up, they're really messed up. And as a result of Americans waking up and realizing that things are broken, and they've been broken by politicians, not by them, but by politicians. They voted for somebody who was not a politician to kick down the doors and to solve the problems. And that person is hated by the politicians who keep creating the problems. And that's where we are today. We have a president who isn't a member of the club, and the club hates him, and they're trying to destroy him because he's a danger to them. God bless him. And God bless you. Have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.